Welcome to the Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. In just a few minutes, we're going to be heading off to the North York Moors for a ride that normally takes place this weekend, the last weekend in April. But because of the coronavirus situation and the nationwide lockdown, all Audax events, all bike events, all bike races around the world, it seems, are cancelled. But I was on the event last year, this time last year, and I'll be bringing you my report from that ride of 2019. I don't know how the lockdown is where you are. Well, I'm feeling very lucky to be living in a rural part of the country. I'm sitting out in my garden now. You can probably hear the birds tweeting away. I'm sitting beneath an apple tree which is absolutely laden with white and pink apple blossoms. It's a pretty nice place to be. Not everybody is lucky enough to have outside space. Not everybody is lucky enough to still be able to ride their bikes locally to where they live. And that's what we're going to be turning to first today. A handful of reports from bike show listeners around the world about how the coronavirus lockdown has got them dusting down their indoor trainers.
Hello, my name is Mark Chillingworth. I'm a business writer and journalist, and as you may be able to hear, a recent convert to the world of turbo trainers. Normally, I'm extremely lucky. I get to ride a mountain bike on the North Downs almost every day of the week, up Box Hill or the nearby hills. But because of coronavirus, I've become a turbo trainer user. I switched to turbo trainers because I was worried about conflict. You are allowed to go out for a ride a day, but I just fear that there'll be conflict with people who don't think we should be on the trails or the roads. And this was a new experience for me to get one of these and try it out. And I'm impressed with the workout you get. Even 30 minutes on one of these is a massive workout. I am missing being out on the hills, watching the seasons change. But the most important thing we do is stop this horrid virus causing any more damage than it already has done, or shorten its span as quickly as possible so that we can ride properly. So turbo trainers, yeah, new experience, very good exercise. I'm enjoying it because it's new, and thank you very much for letting me be part of your podcast.
Good morning from Tokyo. So I have my turbo trainer out on my balcony here in a place called Shibaura, which is a small island of reclaimed land on the east side of Tokyo, on Tokyo Bay. I'm very lucky to have an apartment which is in quite a high tower block, although it's a very small apartment, which is why my turbo trainer is outside. It does have the bonus of having just the most amazing view. So on a clear day like this morning, you get an absolutely amazing view of basically the whole of Tokyo, pushing out to the southwest, and today we're getting a great clear view of Mount Fuji. So Mount Fuji is about 100 kilometers from here, but it's a super clear day today. Also, with the lockdown, pollution's quite a lot less than it can be. From here, you basically get an idea that you're living in a region with about 18 million people. It's quite makes you look at where you are in life, I think, actually viewing here and seeing how many people who are going about their daily business. If I look down, we get the Shinkansen tracks, so that's the bullet train. We can watch those going around. And it's a great place to do a quick hour on the bike and the turbo trainer. I absolutely love coming out here first thing in the morning to reset and not feel like we're in lockdown.
So I'm just finishing what, I don't know, what is it, a ride, a session? I don't know what you do on an indoor turbo trainer in your back room / what is now the office / where the bike sits, in the way of the desk and where the garage door, in some kind of, I don't know, futile attempt to stay fit, which is ironic for somebody who probably only ever got out for a ride once or twice a week. I don't know, and not quite willing to kind of go against the advice of stay indoors, don't put yourself in danger, don't stress the emergency services. So I suppose, I don't know, is it wartime spirit and doing my bit by just sitting on a
on a stationary bike, turn my legs around to a soundtrack that I noticed, frankly, dates me quite badly as a middle-aged man. What we got? We've got a bit of Sonic Youth. We've got a bit of Mudhoney. There's a bit of Idols. So not quite as old as I might actually sound. A bit of Pixies. And I suppose all kind of nice short tunes to actually kind of... I mean, I only have to worry about getting onto the next one rather than facing up to why am I sitting here for an hour at a time. But at the moment, it feels, I don't know, it feels like I'm doing something positive.
Those were some listeners to the bike show who have taken up the indoor trainer as a response to the coronavirus lockdown. And we'll hear from a few more at the end of the show. I am still riding my bike locally around my town, particularly taking my kids on the lanes and the tracks and the roads around us where we live. My kids are 6 and 4, so only really starting out their lives on two wheels. And I have to say that the lack of traffic, the lack of motor traffic, has really opened up the possibilities for cycling in my town, a small town in southeast Wales. It's been great, actually, to see so many people out walking, just strolling or jogging or riding bikes, the kind of people that you never normally see out and about. It's an odd thing, because if the government, in some kind of public health drive, anti-obesity, healthy lifestyles drive, had said, you must take one piece of exercise every day, I think most people would have just laughed at them and it would have had very little effect. But when the government says you may only take one piece of exercise a day, you may only leave your house once a day for a run or a walk or a cycle, suddenly everybody is out running, cycling or walking once a day just to claim their right to do it. And I totally understand that some of this may be because people are stuck at home. Maybe they've been laid off from work. They've got the kids all day at home and, you know, just getting outside, it's just something to do. But the fact that so many people who don't normally ride bikes around town are dusting off their old machines from their garages or their garden sheds and taking them out, it does show that people are willing to ride bikes if it's safe enough to do so. And I'm sure things will change once we return to normal, whatever normal is going to be like after coronavirus. But I do hope that people remember how nice it is to live in a place where there aren't cars on the streets all the time, where they don't feel it's too dangerous to ride a bike, to walk on the streets, to take their children out. If we can just remember that and hang on to that thought and that feeling of freedom and liberty, really, maybe people will see that there is another way, that we can reorganise and re-engineer our streets so that they're not quite so car dominated as they have become over the last few decades. And I hope that there'll be some positive out of this terrible situation, that people will realise that streets can be much more pleasant places when they aren't filled with cars. And it is nice to go for a walk on a sunny evening around where you live. It is nice to take your young children on bikes around where you live. The things that basically have become impossible with so much traffic on the roads before the coronavirus situation. So if there is one small silver lining in this dark cloud of the global pandemic, then I hope that is it. And I think it's something that is worth returning to on the podcast. So if you've had any experiences where you live of the streets changing in some way for the better, and the way people use the streets changing for the better, let me know. I'd like to hear about it. Drop us a line. The email address is bikeshow@gmail.com. That's bikeshow@gmail.com. And you could either write me a message or you could record a little voice memo so we can hear you talk about it in your own words. That'd be really nice. Now to the North York Moors and a ride that I did this very weekend last year. And before I set out on the ride, I caught up with the event organiser, Dean Clementson, and his friend Mike Metcalf, at whose farm the whole event was based.
I'm Dean Clementson. I'm the organiser of these rides. This ride that Jack's doing is 100K, which is a mix of on and off roads, tracks, roads. A little bit of single track that I'm sure you'll enjoy as well.
The sound we can hear is this a huge furnace at the back of the barn, which is keeping everybody warm, just in case you're wondering whether there was a jet engine about to take off. So you're sitting here. This is what I see of Audax organisers, is someone sitting at a desk with loads of cards, some folders, some pens, stamps, that kind of thing. That's the visible side of the Audax organiser. What goes on before we get to this point?
There's a lot that goes on in the background. It all starts a long way back when you sort of think of the route, think of what's a good route, go out and test it, retest it. That's the first thing, and then you think about what makes a good event, because a route's one thing, but you want the event to be good. And this is where Mike's barn comes in, because my mate Mike has let us use his farm as the start-finish point. And it's a really great space, because there's loads of space for camping. It's quite out of the way, so you're not in the middle of a town or anything. So it's fairly quiet. We've got the village almost to ourselves, really, for the weekend. And later on tonight, we've got a couple of kegs of beer, so we'll have a party, and Newbie Whisk won't quite know what's hit it.
What makes a good route in your estimation as an organiser?
Personally, I put on routes that I love riding myself, because apart from anything else, I have to go out and ride them to test them to make sure all the hills are still there. And I think it needs to have quite a natural flow. I don't want it to feel too convoluted, so I don't want any pointless out and backs or any pointless zigzags. This works, I think, the route you're doing. There's a lovely section after the incline. The incline is just hard. It's hard work. People always ask, can I ride up it, or will I have to walk? And I think the majority of people do end up walking up it. It is possible to ride it, but it's hard, because it's around about a mile, and in old numbers it's 1 in 4 or 25%. It's on an old railway line which took Ironstone out of Rosedale back to the furnaces at Teesside, and it was so steep that they had to winch the wagons full of Ironstone up and down it. And back in the day, runaways were really, really common. So if you look online, you can see loads of photos of the locals perched on the wreckage. That's where this wagon that's just wrecked itself at the bottom of the incline. I love sort of bits like that about this ride, the sort of sense of history, because now you look around the moors and it feels very rural, very remote, but 100, 120 years ago it was all heavy industry. It was a completely different landscape. So going to points of interest like that makes it a good ride. Going to nice places like the Lion Inn on Blakey Ridge is a lovely pub. It's got a great atmosphere. All the walkers go there because it's about the only place for miles around, so you'll have a great mix of people in there, as well as tourists out from Middlesbrough and things like that. You want to go somewhere interesting, you want it to feel quite natural, and you don't want it to be too convoluted.
Mike, tell us a bit about where we are. We're on your farm, but a bit more. What's over there? What's over the gate, over the fence over there?
We're in the Vale of Mowbray, which is flat, so you can go up and down the Vale of Mowbray and have flat rides, or you can go up onto the North Yorkshire Dales, where you've got lots of hills, or the North Yorkshire Moors, where you've got lots of hills. And the hills are really quite challenging at both sides. Some fantastic hills on both the Dales and the Moors.
You can get to York without going over a bump, can't you?
You can get to London pretty much from here, on the flat, or you can go into the hills, and it's just an amazing place to cycle. Well, at the moment in the fields we've got fodder beet here. Our land's rented out to a local farmer, and he grows fodder beet on this land at the moment this year. And they'll be harvesting that at the back end of the year, which will then be used to feed his stock, sheep, I presume. Yeah, we're sat talking in what's called a gingang, which is where they used to have ponies going round to drive a mechanism to grind corn. And that's where we're sat, in these old buildings, old agricultural buildings. And today we've got 4 events starting from here. 300K event, which goes right across to the Howgills, and then back over.
Is that all the way to Cumbria?
Yeah. To Cumbria. It's called Beyond the Dales We Know, and it's a lovely scenic route. And then we've got 150K event, which is on and off-road with gravel tracks, and it's a really interesting route. which goes the opposite way and goes up onto the North Yorkshire Moors. And then we've got a 100k event, which follows the same route as the 150k, so it's got on and off road as well.
And that's the one I'm doing.
That's the one you're doing, yeah. Which again is, I think it's 72 miles. It's a lovely route, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. One of the climbs is a long, slow drag up through the forest near Hemsley, and that's one of my favourite climbs. It's a lovely climb, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And then you drop down from Kepwick down this side and through the parks. It's absolutely beautiful, so I'm convinced you'll love it. But it is challenging, especially today if there's a bit of rain about. It'll be a bit slippy in places.
And the fourth ride?
It's 50k, about 30 miles, which goes round. There's a cafe stop at Thorpe Perrow, and it goes around the country roads locally. A little tiny bit of off-road, so you can do it on a road bike. And it's Dean's chosen some absolutely fantastic roads. And he's, even in my own backyard, he's found roads that I didn't even know about. So it's lovely.
Boys, keep off the moors. Stick to the roads. The best of luck.
I see a bad moon rising, and I see trouble on the way. I see earthquakes and lightning, and I see bad times today. Said don't go around tonight, it's bound to take your life. There's a bad moon on the rise. Hurricanes are blowing, and I know the end is coming soon, Lord. I feel rivers overflowing, and I hear the voice of rage and ruin. Said, don't go around tonight, it's bound to take your life. There's a bad moon on the rise.
Well, I'm 22 miles in to the ride, and it's all been easy going through the leafy little villages of this part of North Yorkshire. We've had one little off-road section through some farm fields and tracks, which was really nice. A bit muddy on my slick tyres, slipping around a bit, and then a ford, which wasn't in full spate, so I was able to cycle through that. That was fun. But then we rounded the corner, and right up ahead of me, suddenly, I can see the great dark mass of the North York Moors. In fact, you can't really see the top because the cloud is so low that it's obscuring the top of the moors, so which gives it a kind of, well, mysterious, slightly foreboding sense. And there's been some reasonably heavy rain, or persistent rain if not heavy, this morning, but it's now dry. I've been keeping an eye on the Met Office app on my phone to try and predict what the weather's going to be like, and the consensus seems to be that it's going to be a little bit dry and brighter for the next couple of hours, but then comes the deluge. I think we're getting the back of Storm Hannah, which is coming into southwest of England and South Wales, and then the remnants coming up through the Midlands and up into Yorkshire. Anyway, I've got a waterproof jacket, got waterproof gloves, I haven't got any waterproof shoes, so I think that's going to be the problem.
Things together, and I hope you're quite prepared to die. It looks like we're in for nasty weather. Don't you know that one eye is taken for an eye? Oh, don't go around tonight, it's about to take your life. There's a bad moon on the rise. I said, don't go around.
Our flatlands no more. I am here at the foot of the Ingleby Incline. We've just approached it on, I guess, what was the old mineral tram road. Dead straight, pan flat approach. And then suddenly it forks left And it's just straight up the side of a great big hill. And I can see all the way to the top, and a few riders ahead of me. The nearest ones to me, a pair of them, they are still riding. The ones in front of them, they are pushing now by the looks of things. The ones to the very top can't quite make it out. Whether they're riding or pushing, they're probably going at the same speed anyway. It is jolly long, jolly steep. Well, here we go. Now I've engaged my triple, which I can only do by hand at this point. Something's up with the front mech. I think it might be something to do with the size of the sprocket. I've got, 26, 30 is my lowest gear. And I think I'll be paying that a visit very soon. Oh, the two lads in front of me, they're now walking. Oh, GPS is telling me 15% gradient right now. Bear in mind, this is not tarmac in the slightest. This is quite rough under wheel. I've looked back at my rear cassette and I've got one sprocket there clean, although I'm not actually sure whether I'm going to be able to shift into it. No. Okay. Well, that's a bit of a mechanical fail. And now it's coming onto rain. So we've reached a gate where a few people stopped. About halfway up, maybe two-thirds. I had to get up and walk. But there was one chap ahead of me who just pedalled off towards the horizon. How do you do it?
Oh, just turning the pedals. It's all you can do, isn't it, really? Pick a gear that works and turn the pedals. Fortunately, I must have just about the right enough gear to keep it going. But this next bit's going to be a bit of a challenge.
It's a bit loose, isn't it?
It's a bit loose, or a bit steeper, if anything.
Oh, well, well done.
Thank you.
Can you ride this one too?
I will do, yeah, with fingers crossed. Yep.
Nice looking group. Hey, listen, at least it's warm in here. Look at that.
Yeah, what about it?
It's a five-pointed star.
Well, maybe the owners are from Texas.
Remember the Alamo.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, he was just joking.
Joking? I remember the Alamo. I saw it once in London, in Leicester Square.
She means in the cinema. That film with John Wayne.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Checkmate.
So the first dish has arrived at our table. Would you care to describe what has just appeared in front of you, seeing as you ordered it?
Yeah, it's toad without the hole.
Is that what you ordered?
It's the hole without the toad.
It's a giant Yorkshire pudding with gravy.
Two giant Yorkshire puddings with that.
Well, it was supposed to be one, but I suspect the one didn't come out giant enough, so they've given me two.
So, yeah, there are two holes and no toads.
No toads.
You've been robbed of the toad.
And half a pint of gravy.
And a decent pint of ale.
Yeah, well, chin chin. Well, lunch at the pub was most welcome. If it wasn't quite the highest point in the ride, it was definitely the metaphorical high point. Really nice to get inside a cosy pub and have a pint of beer. And a really good descent on the far side, but now we've got to go straight up the opposite valley. And not only is it really steep, about 25% up here, but Dean has sent us on, well, it's not even a road, it's a kind of broken road, concrete slabs that have just been completely disintegrated by the weather, the frost and the snow and the rain. And so it's another walking experience, and as I push the bike up, I'm quite conscious of the fact that it's about to start raining, and I am probably the tail end marker out of the 100s, if not the tail end marker out of everybody who's headed out this way onto the moors. And the grouse are heckling from amongst the gorse, and there's a lot of grouse up here. I guess this is the time when they don't shoot them, and they are free to breed and enjoy themselves before the guns start blazing in August. Up this hill, then down the other side, then up the other side, and then I think one more climb before the big descent and the sprint finish back to the farm. So I need to keep on pushing. I have to say, it is extremely beautiful. The tops are a little bit bleak and barren, but there's a very fast cinder track once we've got to the top of the incline. But the valleys, I guess these are glacial valleys, smooth and full of dry stone walls, all divided up into lush looking little green blocks of pasture, quite a lot of sheep. It's really beautiful. An extraordinary contrast, really, between the blasted heath and the lush valleys with oak trees that are just coming into leaf. Hawthorn is maybe 2 weeks away from blossoming. I mean, you can see why people fall in love with this landscape. I am not falling in love with this concrete X road. Well, that was a struggle getting up over the top on that terrible path, and then it didn't get much better coming down the other side. Equally rough, but I have to say it's absolutely worth it. It's still raining, sort of gone from heavy rain into drizzle, and I've arrived in an absolutely magical valley of oak trees, sheep and bluebells. It's just like an enchanted valley. It's called Cockayne, or the big house here is called Cockayne, and I've just stopped by a little woodland on a slope, and it's a beech woodland, and the ground is carpeted with bluebells. It's absolutely iridescent. I've never seen so many this year. I mean, well, I don't know if I've seen so many ever. It's astonishing. The smell is overwhelming. It's a beautiful fragrance. And I'm going to conduct an experiment in podcasting here. I'm going to see if you can smell these bluebells. I'm going to hold the microphone right up to them and have a good sniff. Oh. It's a smell like nothing else. Did it work? Could you smell them too? Well, we've got a bit of hail up on the top there, looking back now to where I've just ridden over, and but it stopped raining, and a very welcome sight was round this corner when I saw your motorhome here. You're manning a control. This is the last control, I think.
Yes, it
isn't
is.
It? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's your name?
John.
John. I'm Jack.
All right, Jack. And that's Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Hello.
Jill's a tea lady.
You've got a brilliant spread here. You've got hot drinks, teas and coffees from inside the motorhome, and then fruit, bananas, satsumas.
Flapjack.
Homemade flapjack by
yeah,
Jill.
peanut M&Ms, jelly babies, lots of sugar to keep you going.
I mean, this is what makes an Audax special to me, is when you chance upon, in the middle of nowhere, where we are, very beautiful surroundings, and two lovely people looking after us. Not so how long have you been here today?
I think we're about half past 11 when we got here and got set up, so yeah.
And when did the first one start coming through?
Well, we thought everybody got lost. It was about 2:10, I think, the first one. So, and I got told it'd probably be about 12 when people started arriving. So, yeah, we were worrying a little bit.
And eight more to go after me.
I think that's eight more to go, yeah.
And they're all on the longer one. So I'm the last in the 100, I think.
But it's not a race.
It's not a race. So I'm what you call a full value Audaxer. To take the maximum amount of time to have the maximum enjoyment.
Enjoyment, that's what it's all about.
Okay, well, I might have a jelly baby.
You'll help yourself.
Oh, very good.
Keeps you going.
Well, mini eggs, look, Easter's come and gone, but we've still got the mini eggs.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and any interesting stories from the riders who've come through? Any tales of woe?
Somebody who fell off at the first corner. It was covered in mud, but he said he'd done that on the first corner, but he's still going.
Yeah, all the mud stuck inside of his hands in his crash helmet and the outside of his face. And he must have been talking to Jill, because I looked, I thought, he must have fallen off. Yeah.
They're just very happy people to see us when they get to the top of the hill. They're relieved to see us and we send them off smiling.
Okay, well, I think it's time for me to get rolling before I get totally overtaken by the fast people in the 150. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're more than welcome.
Well, it's raining pretty hard now, and the last section has been on roads and forest tracks, and this last bit has been really tough, up a great big hill. I think we're well up towards 400 metres in height again. Oh God, and there's a strong headwind, and I'm feeling that this is Storm Hannah, or the back end of Storm Hannah definitely now. A couple of riders are approaching me, head down into the wind on this rough track. All the sheep are running away off the mountain by the looks of things, and we've just got to plod on into the storm. And the rain is really coming down, kind of at a, 45 degree angle, I would say, directly from the direction that we're headed. And I've just come up to 100 kilometres, and this ride is supposed to be 100 kilometres, and so it's a little bit over distance. I think it's actually closer to 120 kilometres, but most of that is downhill, as I am about to experience. So just a little bit more to get over this lump, and then a great big long downhill to the end. We're back in the barn, and I've had a great day out. I want to say thank you very much, Dean. That was an outstanding route.
My pleasure. As I said earlier, I've put on routes that I'd love to ride myself, so it's a route that I'd love to ride every year.
It was so nice knowing that we were off on these off-road tracks, but they were going to lead somewhere. They weren't going to disintegrate into complete disaster, although that concrete track of hell... That's going to give me some bad dreams, especially because it comes straight after lunch at the pub. The route had everything. It had the flatlands around here, which was a nice warm-up, and then the industrial kind of up the incline, and then up on the tops where it's kind of wild and desolate, and then these beautiful dales that you're down into. Oh, just really nice.
Farndale is famous for its daffodils. So I sometimes think if we rode the route in February, then you'd get these gorgeous daffodils blossoming everywhere. But
mind you, a lot of bluebells.
Given the weather today, I think April's early enough in the year to do it.
Yeah, I mean there are a lot of bluebells out. Yeah, really yeah, beautiful. So. And then we come back down. We went through all these amazing kind of
parkland.
Yeah, just huge, wealthy landed estates.
Well, that's Thornton Stud. It's not even it's part of Thornton Estate, but it's actually where they kept the horses, which is why it's called Thornton Stud. So it's not even the main estate, but it's an amazing place to ride through.
And Arden House as well. We came past there.
Yes, the old coach road up to the top of the.
Yeah. And then there was quite funny because they got increasingly grand these sort of driveways that we were going down, and I was kind of feeling like To the Manor Born as we came through the last one past these big stone pillars. I thought, this is amazing. And where's the big house? And we made a sharp right turn and we were suddenly cycling through a mucky farmyard full of half-eaten turnips and sheep going, what are you doing here?
That's the public right of way.
I thought that was your sense of humour at work there.
No, that's just the public right of way. It's obviously the hoi polloi had to go that way, whereas the main driveway went out through the grand pillars of the main entrance exit. So
really, really good. I mean, just such a great showcase of this area, and clearly an area that you know amazingly well.
Yeah, I do. I love riding around here. I've ridden around here nearly my whole life. I don't know. I think the mix of on and off road, it just feels really natural. You don't worry about what's on road and what's off road. You just go out and ride your bike, and if you see a nice track going off to the left or right, you just want to go up there and see where it goes. And the ride kind of develops from that sense of just wandering rather than sticking to the same routes because you know it's a good route and you know it goes somewhere. And finding a route that ends up at a nice pub like the Lion is a delight as well.
And now we're back here. There's been hot lentil soup, an array of cakes and sweet things, kegs of beer. The furnace is roaring. People are drying. I'm drying two pairs of gloves over there.
Yeah, everything's going there.
And it's just a really nice atmosphere. It's really different from a lot of events that you do that you just kind of hand in the card and go, you know.
I can't take any credit for that. I'm quite lucky that my mate Mike offered up his farm for the start and finish of the ride. And obviously we all contribute to the catering. I did some baking. His brother-in-law, Roy, has done the soup. We've got Paolo on the... So it's definitely a group effort, but I think in terms of what makes it a great event is having Mike's place to use. And I think the reason Mike's quite happy for us to use it is because Audaxes tend to be quite small-scale, intimate events. So you tend to know people and get to know people, whereas if it was a larger, more commercial event, then it probably wouldn't work, and Mike wouldn't have quite the same relaxed attitude.
Right, you'd be dealing with the public.
Yeah, with it being quite a small-scale event and a few people coming along, yeah, we're quite happy.
How many have you had out on the road in total today?
In total, across four rides, just over 100. Just over 100. And I'm still waiting for 35 to come back on the longest ride, 300 kilometres, all on road, though, around the Dales. Because I think they've got quite wet today. Normally I'd have about 20 back by now, and I've got 3 back. So I think it could be a long night waiting for them to come back in.
And do you think that with the growing interest and fashionability, I suppose, of gravel bikes, adventure bikes, big tired bikes, that Audax, which has traditionally been a road-based pursuit, will start to do more of what you're doing?
Well, like anything in Audax, it depends on the organisers being enthusiastic about doing it. Thing is, we just ride bikes. We don't think of ourselves as Audaxes or roadies or time trialists or anything like that. There's the This Is Not a Tour Rides in Wales that Mark Rigby and James organise, which look fabulous. And I'm sure there are other people across the country who would love to put rides on in the same way. I've got a mate in Scotland, and I was encouraging him to become an organiser, because apart from anything else, in Scotland you have the open access laws, which opens up far more tracks, whereas in England we're very much limited to pretty much public bridleways. Whereas in Scotland you have much more freedom to wander off and use many more brilliant tracks than we have to use in England.
Well, that was the Audax event Don't Keep to the Road. My thanks to Dean Clementson, who you heard there at the end, for organising what was really tremendous day out on the bike. And it's such a shame that that event and so many other events like it have been cancelled this year. Now, Dean's Audax is one of a handful of organised bike events that I feature in my new book, Lost Lanes North, which is out on the 4th of May, though I have been selling copies a few weeks in advance of that to people directly from the Lost Lanes website. And I know many bike show listeners have already bought a book. Thank you so much for doing that. I really hope you like it. It was a great pleasure producing the book. I cycled the most parts of Northern England, trying to find the best, most beautiful countryside to ride a bike in. And I hope you are pleased with the result. I hope you feel like I've done justice to what is really a wonderful part of England and a place that too many people who are not from the north of England overlook when they're thinking of places to go. And I hope that another possible positive from this coronavirus situation is that people will think about where they can go cycling nearer to home, that people won't be flying off for weekends in Mallorca and maybe head up to the Lake District for a weekend cycling, because the cycling that we've got on our doorsteps in Britain, just a couple of hours on the train away, is fantastic. Some of the best riding I think there is in the world, in terms of scenic variety, in terms of the way the landscape changes, in terms of the history of the places, in terms of architecture, pubs, cafes, B&Bs, small towns and villages. We are very lucky to live where we do. And I think we could all benefit from exploring our own country before we jet off to faraway destinations on our bikes. So if you'd like to buy a copy of the book, you can buy them from me. I have a web shop at lostlanes.co.uk and I will sign them. I'll even dedicate them to you or to a friend or family member if the book is a gift. And when I opened the shop to pre-orders of Lost Lanes North, the first 200 books came with a free embroidered sew-on patch, a kind of cloth patch that you could sew on your saddlebag or your satchel. Those went in a flash. In the first 48 hours, all 200 of those were claimed, but I held over another 50 for loyal listeners to the bike show. If you didn't hear about the book until now, do not fear. If you order one now, there are 50 free cloth patches for bike show listeners. All you have to do is use the coupon code THEBIKESHOW when you do your checkout, and I'll put a patch in the post along with the book. The patches are normally £5. You can buy them on the Lost Lanes website as well. But as I said, there are 50 freebies for bike show listeners. Now, we're nearly at the end of the podcast, and I'm going to play out with a few more reflections from bike show listeners about life on the turbo trainer. Until next time, keep well, stay safe, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Hi, this is Tom Isett. I am an occasional long-distance cyclist and cycle tourist. Normally I would be out and about in weather like this, but due to the lockdown, I'm stuck here at home. So I decided to get the dreaded turbo out of the cellar and set my bike up. And I'd forgotten how much I hate this thing. It really is everything that's awful about cycling indoors. I can't stand it. It's miserable, it's boring. I want to be outside, looking at stuff, smelling, seeing, and here I am stuck in the man cave instead. It's pretty horrible, to be honest, but I'm afraid that's what we've got to put up with for the moment anyway. I'm sure there are lots of people out there doing Zwift and all those other dreadful things, but from my point of view, horrible. The gamification of cycling is something I can't get on board with at all. The joy of cycling for me is being outside, not stuck in here. However, I did eat several hundred chocolate biscuits in the last week, so I need to do something to keep the legs turning, to keep the waistline under control. So this is it. God, it's awful.
Hi, I'm Mike Davis. I used to be a mountain bike journalist and now I'm just a regular person. I am currently sitting in my garage riding with people from Italy and Germany and Canada and a bunch of other places. So, some backstory. I broke my ankle really quite badly in August of last year, and by the time I could actually pedal but not go out, I got a turbo trainer, always hated them. And by the time I was up to riding outside again, coronavirus came along. So effectively, coronavirus hasn't got me onto a turbo, but it's kind of stopped me getting off it. So there we go. Ride on, Zwift fans.
I'm Dave Cox. I was a born-again cyclist in the 1970s. Last week, I did 100 miles and two 40-mile rides and a bit of pottering around locally in Birmingham. But from now on, thanks to a message from Asthma UK, reinforced by a message from the NHS, reinforced by a letter from the government, I'm on total lockdown or shielded. So my usual cycling habit has been very much curtailed. I managed to get a turbo that I bought some years ago back from a friend. It's a very basic turbo. It's not suitable for Swift or anything like that. But that's not really my scene. So I'm doing what might be called touring turbo. I'm not really a serious tourist. I'm more of a club run cyclist with the Beacon in Birmingham, which I've done for many years. I hope you can hear the birds singing. I'm doing this in the garden. I'm lucky living in Bourneville, a garden suburb. Got the bike set up, crude turbo, and if it wasn't for the bike show, I'd probably be bored to tears. I've tried music, which is okay. I've tried Radio 4, which is fine, except I get so angry with the news. So I can basically settle down to an hour with the bike show's podcasts. And they're really great. I've had three so far. I look forward to it in the morning. The best one was a ride with Ian Walker up the Wye and Usk Valley, where it really did feel like, as usual, I was at the back of a club run. I couldn't talk, I could barely keep up, but I could listen to other people chatting as they went up the hills. And it's, you know, it's not a bad way of touring on a turbo.